time for the Vintage Truth Podcast with best-selling author and Bible teacher, Jeff Kinley.
All right, it's episode 159 of the Vintage Truth Podcast. It's vintage, it's truth, it's God's truth all the way. And that's what we're all about at the Vintage Truth Podcast. Hey, if you'd like to know more about my ministry, go to jeffkinley.com. And you can check out more of my books or go to Amazon and just type in my name, Jeff Kinley. Now, be careful. Don't type in Jeff Kinney. He wrote the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series. And I get a lot of people who tag me in posts on Instagram and Twitter. Oh, thank you, Jeff Kinney, Jeff Kinley, for your book, Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And sometimes I just don't have the heart or the energy to correct them. So they just go on thinking it's me. Anyway, there's a big difference between the two of us. He writes, fiction for, junior high boys, and I write Christian stuff. He's worth about $40 million, and I'm not worth $40 million. So let's put it that way, okay? But anyway, go check out my books on Amazon. And also, if you haven't picked up my latest book, Uncovering the Secrets of Bible Prophecy, then I know you want to do that because in that book, I help you understand what prophecy is all about, why it's necessary, why God gave it to us. How do we interpret it? How do we recognize false prophecy that's out there in the world today? How do we see emerging prophecies all around us? How do we help defend the faith? How do we convince others of Christ's credibility and the Bible's authenticity with prophecy? It's all there in the book, Uncovering the Secrets of Bible Prophecy. And go to Amazon, order your copy today. Hey, for the next couple of podcasts, I want to be talking about the revelation of Scripture. And what I mean by that is, how has this God revealed himself to us throughout history? And we established in a previous podcast how the evidence supports the belief that there is a God. And of course, the Bible doesn't attempt to prove God. The Bible assumes that God exists because it's written to people that exist or that believe in the existence of God. And the Bible wasn't written just to culture or to atheists kind of thing. And so the Bible doesn't set out to especially prove the existence of God, although there are evidences in there. At the same time, if there is this God that's out there, then how has he revealed himself according to Scripture, according to what we know in Scripture? So I want to talk about that in the next couple of podcasts under this whole title of the revelation of Scripture. Let's go ahead and begin by just defining our terms. When you say, well, Jeff, what do you mean by God has revealed himself? Well, there's the Greek word for revelation is the word apokalypsis, and it means to reveal something. When we transliterate that into English, we have the apocalypse, right? Or that's what people call the book of Revelation, the apocalypse, which is in the Greek, the revelation, the apocalypsis of God. And it means to reveal. And so when we say, apply that to Scripture, what are we talking about? Well, we're saying that the word revelation and reveal signify the unveiling of things previously unknown. You see, for us to know anything about God specifically, he has to reveal himself to us. If I were to say to you, let me tell you about my three sons, then now you might be able to do some digging, work on the internet and maybe dig up something about maybe one of them, but you're not going to really know who they are. You're not going to know what they do or anything like that unless I reveal that information to you. But it's my information to reveal. And the revelation of God about himself is his information to reveal. And that revelation has been communicated to mankind, not only to the Jewish nation and to Abraham and to Moses and to David and the writers of Scripture, but also to mankind. So you say, well, Jeff, what are some of the ways that God reveals himself to mankind? Well, there are two primary ways, two fundamental ways that God has chosen to reveal himself to us. In broad categories, they are A, general revelation, and B, special revelation. You say, well, what is general revelation? Well, general revelation refers to the manifestations of God through creation and through conscience, through creation and through conscience. In fact, the Bible tells us in Romans chapter 1 that we can actually know something about God from creation. Psalm 19 tells us that the heavens declare the handiwork of God. So it tells us in Psalm 19 that God is the creator. But in Romans chapter 1, we find out that God has actually revealed general information about himself to mankind from what he has made. It says in verse 19, it says, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. So the Bible makes a claim that God has, that this thing up there, this being, this personage, whoever it is, has made himself known to all mankind. How's he done that? It says in verse 20, for since the creation of the world, so since day one, God has revealed himself. It says this, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes. Oh, so there are things about God that we cannot look at him and say, well, he's made like this. He's this tall. No, they're invisible attributes. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and his divine nature have been clearly seen. So we know something about God from creation. What do we know? We know that he's an immaterial being. He has invisible attributes. He has eternal power, because what other kind of power could create the universe in the way that he created it? And he has a divine nature. There is something godlike about him. And in fact, he is God. So he has a divine nature. And how have we clearly seen these things? How has mankind clearly seen these things for, 6,000 or more years? It says being understood through what has been made. So God tells man, I have given you an understanding of some basic things about me through what I have created. Where you see that the majesty and the glory of the universe, you conclude certain things about me, that I am divine, that I have eternal power, and that I am invisible because you can't see me. So he has these invisible attributes. It says at the end of verse 20, says, so that they are without excuse. So in other words, what God is claiming here is that no person will ever be able to say to God, I didn't know you existed. Now, that's a bold claim for the Bible to make. It says so that they're without excuse. In other words, God's not going to get to heaven when these people go to heaven to stand before him at the judgment. And they're not going to say, well, God, I was blind. Or I grew up in a hut and I never went outside. Or I was alone on an island, with my tribe. And God's not going to say to them, well, I guess because of those excuses, then I'm going to let you go. No, you're without excuse. God said, you understand, if you have a basic understanding of a child, that you can understand that there is a supreme being. And so to argue against that is simply to say that this verse is a liar. So basically what that's saying is there are really no such thing as honest atheists. Okay? Now there are atheists, people that claim to believe that there is no God, but there are no honest atheists according to this verse, because God says already put it within you. And it says in the beginning of that passage of scripture in verse 18, it says that the only way these people deny all this, it says they have to suppress the truth and unrighteousness. They have to actively deny what they know in their mind to be true, generally speaking, about this being. Now, they don't know he's the God of the Bible. They don't know his name is Jesus or Yahweh. They don't know what he's done. None of those things, but they know he's there. And so there actually are no atheists. In fact, this is going to be borne out in time in the book of Revelation. The Bible tells us that when God unleashes his judgments upon the world, scripture says that they all will attribute the judgments to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. So everybody on the earth during the tribulation will know where the judgments are coming from, i.e. there won't be any atheists in the tribulation period. So atheism will suffer philosophically a brutal death at the hands of the judgment of God during the tribulation period. So God basically says there are no atheists. Scripture says, and I believe it's Proverbs or Psalm 14:1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Why is that a foolish thing to say? Why are you a fool if you say there's no God? Because God says, I've made it plain to you. That's why. This is obvious. Anybody can get this. This is elementary math, all right? Anybody can get this. So he's made himself known through creation. And then he says over in chapter 2, in verse 14, he says, "For when the Gentiles who do not have the law, the Jewish law, to know all these specifics about God, do instinctively the things of the law, these not having the law are a law to themselves, in that they show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience bearing witness, and their thoughts alternately accusing or else defending them. On the day when, according to my gospel, God will judge the secrets of men through Jesus Christ." So the second thing about general revelation, God says you not only see it in creation, but I've also put it in your conscience. So your conscience will tell you the basic difference between right and wrong. Now, we have a depraved nature. We have a sinful nature. We understand all that. We're sinners. We naturally choose sin. But still in our conscience, we know it's wrong. Certain things about life and about behavior are just against the law of man. Now, you might be able to hear the rain pouring down. I don't know if you can hear it right now, but it's really coming down outside. So just another expression of nature from God. But that's general revelation, okay? Now, the second kind of revelation is special revelation. And this is not the things that God has put in the sky, in creation, or in the hearts of men that everyone knows, that they can't deny. Special revelation is only given to some. And special revelation refers to the acts of God by which he has disclosed to some, not all, of mankind, a personal knowledge of himself. In other words, you know specific things about God and not just the general stuff that he's put out in the sky in the creation for you. And the result of that special revelation we know as the scriptures. Now, I want to make some important distinctions between general and special revelation or specific revelation. I think is very important. And this is helping us understand how God talks to us, how God speaks to mankind. General revelation refers and communicates more to the senses of man, more to the conscience and to the mind, understanding creation with the mind, understanding morality with the conscience. Special revelation communicates more to the will and to the emotion. So God says something specifically to us regarding what we should do, how we should respond to what we know about God. That's a special revelation. Those are specifics, okay? God didn't just say to Moses, y'all do good because I'm God. No, he gave him 10 commandments, okay? Those are specific, special revelatory items. Another distinction is general revelation allows us to comprehend the existence of God and some of his attributes, whereas special revelation allows us to comprehend most all of God's attributes, including his plan of salvation, okay, and how his specific attributes really played themselves out in mankind's history through providing salvation. Another distinction is general revelation is distorted to a certain degree by man's reasoning because of his sin, and therefore a reliable theology solely dependent on general revelation is impossible. You get that? So you can't form a complete theology based on general revelation. That's what a lot of people try to do. A lot of religions do that. A lot of people who believe in this whole coexist thing. Oh, we know certain general things about God. He's big, he's loving, he's good, he created the world, whatever. And everything else really doesn't matter because we have that general revelation. So we all just get along, right? You can't form a theology on that because that's incomplete. And secondly, God has actually given us more information about him. And that's where special revelation becomes then the only authoritative source of the true knowledge of God, as well as obviously the way to heaven. You can't get that through looking at the stars. No one's going to become a Christian. No one's going to get saved because they, you know, look at a mountain and go, "Wow, God, you're awesome." No, you got to know something about salvation. That's special revelation. Let me give you one more. General revelation exists today as it always has in creation and in conscience. That's never going to change. There's always going to be the creation. There's always going to be human conscience. However, special revelation exists today primarily in the scriptures, whereas we're going to see that God has revealed himself in many different other ways. The primary way in which he speaks to mankind today is through the scripture. Why? Because scripture is specific. I mean, we've got 66 books of the Bible, and God speaks through all of them. Old Testament, New Testament, history, poetry, prophecy, narrative, you know, gospels, didactic, revelation, you know, every book of the Bible, God speaks. That's why 2 Timothy 3:16 says all scripture is inspired by God and profitable. So it's worth reminding ourselves that God is the initiator of all this revelation, okay? He's the one that put it together. And were it not for his sovereign desire to make himself known to us, we would have no other knowledge about God other than what we know from creation, okay? General revelation. That's all we would have. Thankfully, God has gone beyond that and revealed himself specifically through many, many different ways. So let's ask ourselves the question, how has God revealed himself throughout history? How did he do it? I mean, what was his methods? Where did he choose to let us know who he was? Well, let's start by saying this. God has, first of all, revealed himself through appearances. So, whoa, you're saying God appeared to mankind way back in history? Yeah, he sure did. So how did he do that? Well, several different ways. There's a theological term called a theophany, okay? And this just refers to any sort of visual or phenomenal manifestation of God. For example, like God appearing in the form of an angel in Genesis chapter 18, when the angels came to Abraham. And in fact, one of those we believe is the pre-incarnate Christ. So technically that's a Christophany, not just a theophany. God appeared in Exodus 3 to Moses through a burning bush. He spoke to him through the bush. That's a theophany. And then also through his glory in Exodus chapter 33. So anytime God makes any sort of visual appearance, it's called a theophany. And these physical manifestations that happened throughout the Old Testament, they ceased when Jesus Christ came on the scene. He was the ultimate physical expression of God, and we don't need any more after that. And I'll talk more about that in just a minute. The second way that God appeared or has appeared to people have been through visions, okay? Now, a vision is like a very lucid dream, only you're not asleep, you're typically awake, okay? And only the person who receives the vision typically sees it. We see that in Isaiah chapter 6 when Isaiah saw the vision of the Lord high and lifted up. We see it in Revelation chapter 1 when John, the Apostle John, is given this vision of the book of Revelation. So God would speak through various visions. A third way, and I alluded to this a moment ago, that God reveals himself through his appearances is through the incarnation. Now, Jesus was not technically a theophany. He was an incarnation. Christ and these whole theophanies ceased after the incarnation. What do I mean by an incarnation? It sounds like, you know, something you'd buy your date for the prom. I bought her an incarnation. No, it just simply means the Word became flesh. John 1:14. It means that God took on human form and revealed the Father to us through that incarnation. And we see that in John chapter 1, as I mentioned, verse 14. We see it in John 1 in verse 18. He said the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And then over in, it says, and we beheld his glory, glory as of the only begotten from the Father, full of grace and truth. He says, no man has seen God at any time, the only begotten God who is in the bosom of the Father. He has explained him. Now, let me just pause for just a second and see if I can't parse a couple of these words for you to kind of make more sense. Because sometimes we refer to Jesus as the only begotten Son of God. And we go, wait a minute, how can Jesus, does that mean when Jesus was born, that's when he began? No, that word begotten, monogenes, is a Greek word that just means unique, one of a kind. It means there's no one else like him. And when Christ came to the earth, there would be no other time when a member of the Trinity would become, who would take on human flesh and walk about and then suffer and then live under the Father's rule as Christ voluntarily submitted him. So that's what we mean by the only begotten. It says, who is in the bosom of the Father just simply refers to the deep intimacy between the Father and the Son. So in other words, if Christ is that close to the Father, then whatever he tells us about the Father must be true. And then the last thing in the verse says, he, Jesus, has explained him. It's where we get the Greek word, it's where we get the word exegesis. It means to explain something, like you exegete a text, you know, from the Bible. Well, Jesus exegeted the Father to us, and that is the essence of the incarnation. God appeared to man. More about God's revelation next time.
Thanks for listening to the Vintage Truth Podcast. Please subscribe and share with a friend. For more about Jeff's ministry, go to jeffkinley.com.